Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earle, joined by Alex Lord. Braves opening day. By this time tomorrow, the Braves will be 1-0 against the Philadelphia Phillies. Yes, I'm already calling. You know, I'm all about the bold predictions when it comes to this Atlanta Braves. Spencer Strider toes the rubber against Zach Wheeler. Probably the best pitching matchup you could possibly ask for. I think if you look around the league, I haven't looked around the league at everyone, but you usually got ones versus ones. So you got ace versus ace in most of these matchups. I don't think there's a better ace versus ace matchup because for my money, these are the two best pitchers in the National League, Spencer Strider and Zach Wheeler. And that's probably my biggest storyline. Best versus best. You got the changing of the guard in Atlanta. You got the old veteran. You got two guys that have had a ton of success against each other. Zach Wheeler has dominated the Braves, especially recently. Go back to the playoff games. Go back. I think he has a 12-7 record with a close to 3.15 ERA. Then Spencer Strider on the other side. We know about the postseason struggles a couple years ago, but he's not 8-0 in eight starts or eight appearances, seven starts with a 1.9 ERA and a 13.5 K9. It couldn't get better. If you love pitching, it couldn't be a better matchup to start off the season.
Yeah, it's where it ended last year for the Braves. And, you know, the Phillies may act like they're all big and bad and too good for the Atlanta Braves, but they're getting up for this one. It's the second most expensive opening day ticket behind the Rangers. And it's going to be a madhouse up there at Citizens Bank because they don't like Spencer Strider. We don't like those guys. Obviously, the next storyline's to snit comments. It's just got all the makings for an absolute masterclass, especially with those two guys on the mound.
Yeah, it's going to be a zoo. And, I don't know. I think maybe because I talk a lot about Philadelphia, a lot of my social media, especially on TikTok, is Philadelphia Sports Radio. And they don't pick any bones. They don't beat around the bush. They hate the Atlanta Braves. They want to win this division almost as much as they want to win a World Series. They want to conquer the Atlanta Braves. It is very important to them. So don't let them tell you that it isn't. This is going to be a zoo-like playoff atmosphere to start off the season. And for the two reasons you just mentioned, one, they do not like Spencer Strider. They are so happy he is going to get the first start of the season in Philadelphia. That's like a dream matchup for them. Two, you have Brian Snicker coming out. We talked about it last week, coming out and saying, you know, they were so mean to his wife and his kids that he will never bring them back. Philadelphia fans also aren't happy that Snicker, let's be real, he has used the excuse a few times talking about the playoff format and how it doesn't benefit the Atlanta Braves. They think he's just making excuses. I think there's something to it. I think most people think there's something to it, but it doesn't really matter because it happened and they lost. And the Philadelphia Phillies fans are going to hang their hat on it. They hate Brian Snicker. Yep. They hate Spencer Strider. It's going to be a zoo-like atmosphere. And I really think that's one of the more exciting aspects of it because it is going to be loud and raucous. And they are going to be booing every time Brian Snicker, maybe he comes out for a pitching change. There'll be boo birds. When he gets announced, there'll be boo birds. When Spencer Strider gets announced, there'll be boo birds. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's a highly anticipated opening day. Hopefully it doesn't get rained out, or hopefully it does. We are golfing Thursday, but if it does, we'll still.
You can't tell them that.
We'll be golfing
Thursday.
It was
an accident.
Anyway, I do want to say, you know, to you Philly fans, I don't know if you saw it, but you guys reacted the exact way I expected you to react to the Brian Snicker news. What you bring up, Braves fans throwing trash onto the field after a bad call. It was a bad call. Making excuses for yelling at women and children and saying like, yeah, we got them, guys. It's just this crazy toxic fan base, and there are bad apples in every single fan base. So if you're one of the good Philly fans, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the guys who are trying to make excuses for talking to women and children like you're trying to talk to a grown man. And it just makes for this rivalry is so much better. We've kind of been spoiled a little bit because 2 years ago, we had this little back and forth with Mets fans. We chased them all the way down from 10.5. Now we've got this rivalry with Phillies fans. I don't know what it is about Braves country, but we just, you know, somehow bring out the worst in people.
It's dominance. It's dominance. When you win 21 of 27 or whatever it is, division titles, people are going to hate you and they want to beat the Atlanta Braves. They want to win the division. I think every true baseball fan knows how important winning a division is. Everyone wants to win the World Series, but everyone really knows that that's kind of a crapshoot. It's why the best teams don't always win. And sometimes you get lucky and you get in there. Look at the Arizona Diamondbacks. I mean, that team was a crap team. They were not good, but they end up in the World Series. I think the Rangers were good, but they win the World Series and they were like the fifth or sixth seed in the American League. So the World Series is not always the best team, but over 162 games, you get to establish and really put your foot on the gas and say, hey, we're more dominant than you. We are the better team. And that's why I think division titles in baseball carry a little more weight than they may be due in other sports. But I agree. I think this Philadelphia and this Braves rivalry is the best in baseball right now. I don't think it's even close. There's genuine animosity between the fan bases, which is common in rivalries, but you have animosity between the players. Orlando Arcia and Bryce Harper last year. Brian Snicker against the Philadelphia fans, Spencer Strider against the Philadelphia fans. You have great storylines. And beyond that, the Braves have dominated. They have that World Series ring that Philadelphia Phillies are still chasing. They have those six straight division titles, but you have a knock on us. You've beaten us the last 2 years. So to make rivalries great, there has to be even like arguments on both sides that make you just kind of hate each other, because we're never going to budge on the fact that we've won a World Series and six straight division titles. You're never going to budge on the fact that you've beaten us the last 2 years. And there's just this stalemate here. And guess what? To open the season, we get to talk trash to each other. It's what it's all about to me. I think it's great. Now, obviously taking it too far is something that we talked about, but you know, good old fashioned rivalry banter in sports is why I started this website. It's why I started this show. This is what we love.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you love the highs, the lows, everything in between, the hate, the love, everything that sports brings us, this rivalry epitomizes. It's great for baseball. It's great for sports in general, because when have you really – there's always been these, friendly rivalries, I would think, other than maybe like the Dodgers, Astros, Yankees, Astros. But in recent memory, it's just really all friendly banter and everything like this. There's real animosity between these two clubs, between these two fan bases. And I think you nailed it. Like the Mets, we can kind of consider that a rivalry because of the 10.5 games and everything like that. But the reality is the Mets haven't won. The Mets haven't beat the Braves. The Mets don't have that thing over the Braves, whereas the Braves have won. The Phillies have also won. That's what a rivalry is all about. It's about a back and forth, and that's what makes it so great. The MLB did a great job making this the opening day series, the opening weekend series. You know, knowing the MLB and Rob Manfred, they would have had the opening, you know, in the middle of May or something. But they did a good job this one, especially in Philly. That's the best part, is we're going back to Philly where our season ended. I'm super pumped.
Where both teams' season ended, ironically. Yep. Yes, yep. The Phillies blew a lead against the pesky little Diamondbacks, which I just think is absolutely hilarious. I mean, talk about choking. I mean, it's one thing to lose in the NLDS to a good team. It's another thing to blow a 3-2 lead coming back home against a bad baseball team. I don't want to say bad.
Coming back to the bank, where all you could talk about was like, we just got to win one at the bank. Going back to the bank. And you lose two. Yeah. So the little snakes.
Yeah. The snakes aren't going to be so little anymore after signing Jordan Montgomery, which is something we will talk about later in the show. But my final storyline for this series, and I think this is one of the most exciting aspects of every single baseball season, is, and the Braves don't have a lot of new faces because most of the faces are the same. They all come back. They're all signed long term. But getting to see those guys in their new threads. And I remember when I was a kid playing like MLB 2K or MLB The Show. So being so excited anytime a guy got traded, because like, oh my God, I get to use him. It's like, this is, you get to see Chris Sale on the bump this weekend for the first time in a Braves uniform. You get to see Jared Kelenic. He's probably going to start the first two games against Nola and Wheeler, right-handed pitchers, who, by the way, had a very nice little ending to spring training. See if that can continue. So that's another good storyline. We get to see Adam Duvall back in a Braves uniform. And maybe we see Aaron Bummer, Jesse Chavez. Guys, we haven't seen a uniform. Tyler Matzek. Matzek missed all of last season. So that's another very exciting aspect of opening day and having some new guys on the team.
Yeah, outside of just exciting to see these guys finally lace it up in a real game, we get to see Chris Sale, the reason he was acquired. We need some more lefty dominance from the starting pitcher. Let's see what you got, Chris Sale. This is the team that's knocked us out both times the past 2 years. Let's see what you got. Obviously, it's going to put a lot of sail in the winds of the Braves if Chris Sale goes out there and looks dominant against this lefty dominant lineup in the Phillies.
Yeah, I mean, you said it, you put it the nail on the head. That's exactly the reason that they went out and got Chris Sale for moments like these. Maybe not the opening day moment, but that always.
This is going to be what's October. I mean, we're going to have to see the Phillies.
Yeah, that's what always brings me back is if we get swept by the Phillies, it's going to be hilarious to see a lot of the people's reactions. Even though it's not really going to matter in the grand scheme of things, it will be absolutely hilarious because people will freak out. It is inevitable. Coming up after the break, should Max Fried take notes from Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery's free agencies? One of the last pillars of MLB free agency, Jordan Montgomery, finally signed just 2 days before MLB opening day. Scott Boras and really screwed a lot of his clients, Montgomery, Blake Snell, Cody Bellinger, all held out for so long and all got well below their market value, what they probably could have gotten earlier in the offseason. Listen, nobody likes Scott Boras. He's bad for baseball. Nobody's feeling sorry for him. But you do have to feel sorry for the players who have earned the right to make $100+ million or $150 million or whatever those original contracts. I know for Blake Snell, I think there was an original offer of about $150 million. Well, Scott Boras countered and said, I want something like $270 million. It's like, dude, this is like, we're not even in the same stratosphere here. And now he's settling for a $31 million contract with the Giants. And obviously, as Braves fans, we have our own big free agent in Max Fried set to hit free agency at the end of the season. It doesn't seem like those talks are seriously ongoing, but I don't see how he doesn't get that notification yesterday about Jordan Montgomery, a pretty comparable pitcher, maybe slightly worse, or Blake Snell, a comparable pitcher, maybe slightly worse, only getting one-year deals with a player option in year two and not be going, damn, maybe the market isn't as hot as originally expected. Maybe the grass isn't always greener.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly taking a risk. Not only Max Fried, but all as well as Snell and Montgomery. And quite frankly, it may have not even been their risk. I know that, you know, at the end of the day, it's their players. But Boras is in control of these negotiations, or his underlings are, whatever it may be. Don't get it twisted that Cody Bellinger or Snell or Montgomery is there every single step of the way. These guys hire agents to do their job. So realistically, Boras is gambling with these guys. You know, if Snell gets hurt, there goes $100 million out the window. And the same could be said for Max Fried, whereas, like, you know, you get a deal done right here, and that's why Acuna, Ozzy, Austin, all these other guys that sign contracts, it's about security. They're happy where they are. Now, in that same breath, if you believe you want to test free agency, that's your right. Max Fried has pitched as well consistently over the past 3 or 4 years as any lefty on the planet, any pitcher on the planet. And if he thinks he wants to risk this season, you know, he's going to bet on himself and therefore his injury history, he deserves the right. But this, like you said, I don't think Max Fried is, you know, super in depth in touch with all what's going on in the MLB transaction wire. But it would be impossible to not see what's going on and have that in the back of your head, even as he prepares for this series in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's not good news. It is not good news for pitchers like Max Fried and stuff like that. Now, I definitely think Scott Boras screwed a lot of this up.
I do too.
If he had done it correctly, these guys would have.
Well, the thing is got 100 million. These GMs and these negotiators for the teams have just been, you know, they're probably sick and tired of Boras. And you said it to begin. I hate it for the players. I hate it for Montgomery. I hate it for Snell. You know, they went and tested free agency. They were in line for hundreds of millions of dollars. Bellinger too, all of his clients, and their agent is basically screwing them. But I love it for Boras because that guy sucks. That guy is bad for baseball. And, you know, hopefully this is a wake up call that, you know, maybe the GMs are kind of having this unspoken, like, hey, we don't want to deal with this guy. Let's not give in to him, you know? And I obviously this is total speculation, but that would be great for baseball if we could just get Boras out of here.
Yeah, I mean, MLB free agency has taken a huge hit strictly because
one of the biggest guys signed 2 days before opening day.
Yeah, that and Blake Snell signed, what, 10 days ago?
Yeah,
and then Cody Bellinger signed less than a month ago. So, yeah, you're three of the biggest free agents, three of the top five free agents on this market signed, you know, within a month of the season. And beyond that, I mean, you want a lot of these deals to take place in the middle of the offseason. So you have something to talk about. You have, you know, Jordan Montgomery and all of his hype around him. Oh, he signed 2 months before. Now spring training and all those storylines are big. Same with Blake Snell. Same with Cody Bellinger. All that stuff is lost because they sign a couple days. And beyond that, Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell aren't going to be ready for opening day. Jordan Montgomery might not be ready till the middle of May. We saw something very similar happen with the Braves. And I believe he was a Scott Boras client at the time. Dallas Keuchel signed, you know, in the middle of the season, wasn't ready until like June. So Yeah, this is not something new. This is something Boris has been doing. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. In this case, they got screwed. Maybe there is kind of a, you know, a hush-hush among GMs that we're not going to give in to them. It's kind of hard to believe that no other team would match that deal with Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting here as a Braves
fan. Why wouldn't the Yeah.
You know, we don't really need a fifth starter. But no. If it's just a one-year, $25 million deal with a player option, I mean, why the hell not? But, yeah, I think Max Fried has to kind of look at this and just wonder if it's worth betting on his health, because there's clearly things that teams desire if they're going to give you $200 million, which is what I think he's looking for. And one of those is postseason success, and the other is being, you know, a workhorse, durable. Max Fried hasn't pitched over 165 innings over his career more than once. That's a big deal. There's a reason Nola got $172 million and the Braves were interested, because he's a workhorse. He's one of the few guys in the league that will go 200 innings almost every single season, or at least push that threshold. And Max Fried has not shown this. If he gets injured, he could be looking at a major, major discount going into this free agency.
In today's day and age, I could almost argue, I'm going to make the argument that durability is maybe more important than production, because if you're looking, you know, head to head, Max Fried has outperformed Aaron Nola. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The numbers say that. But he might not get that contract because he just hasn't been available. The best ability is availability. So, you know, when you're a pitcher, especially in today's age of injuries, you know, being available is, I'm going to say it, maybe the top priority for at least this Braves team.
Well, yeah, I mean, this day of age where everyone's getting injured. Yeah. I mean, especially when you have consistently nagging injuries like Max Fried, which the blister has been a big deal. He served, what, probably five or six stints on the IL over the last 3 or 4 years. With a blister. He also had the elbow discomfort. That's not something teams are going to be very easy about when talking in negotiations, because, you know, they never really got an explanation for it. I mean, he came back and he pitched fine, but we'll see what happens this year. I do think this is a situation where the Braves are right to hold firm. Hopefully Max Fried or his representatives come back to the table. But I think at the end of the day, if you're looking at these two signings and you're a Braves fan and you're hoping for Max Fried to resign, there's no way you can look at this any way but positively. It can only help you. And if you're Max Fried, you got to be thinking there like, damn, you know, those are two comparable players and they got less. Coming up after the break, Fox 5's Kelly Price is going to join us. Joining us again on Sports Talk ATL, Fox 5's Kelly Price. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us again.
Yeah, of course. Happy to be here.
So we have opening day starting tomorrow. What are you? We just talked about three storylines, kind of it going into opening day. What's one that you're most excited about, just as far as this series is concerned?
Well, I mean, it's got to be the fact that they're opening up against the Phillies. What more poetic kind of justice could you have to this season than maybe sweeping them or at least winning that series to open this campaign? I mean, it's obviously been a tough ending to the year for the Braves the last couple of years, as well as Philly being the ones to hand those losses at the end of the year. So I think it's super exciting that they get to open up with such a big series. Hopefully the weather can cooperate. I know there's kind of some bad forecasts out there, but all the excitement that goes into it, I mean, you really can't script it any better.
No, I mean, Citizens Bank is going to be absolutely rocking. They love to say it's the best environment in baseball, though I'd argue Truist is definitely up there. It's going to feel like a postseason environment, even though it's opening day. You got Spencer Strider, Zach Wheeler, best on best. Spencer Strider hates those guys. They hate Spencer Strider. Snit adds a little bit more fuel to the fire with his comments about the raucous Philly fans and how disrespectful they were to his wife and kids. I mean, you really couldn't script it. Like you said, a more poetic opening day. Very often this happens in the NFL where they just nail the opening, you know, week one game. It doesn't feel like this happens too often for the MLB where we get something that everybody is excited about. This is the number one rivalry in this sport today. Maybe, you know, up there in any sport.
Yeah, well, I think there's also not as many of these kinds of situations in the MLB right now. There's not a lot of, you know, rivalries, to your point, in series that kind of transcend the actual games themselves, whereas this has really become such a heated rivalry. Every game really matters, not just in the division race, but like you said, the fans get super into it. And I didn't go last year to the playoff series, but I went the years before to Citizens Bank, and that is one of the loudest places I have ever been. And I've covered a lot of huge sporting events, and that I've covered the World Series, and that was seriously one of the craziest environments I've ever been a part of. I will say though, everyone was very nice to me, but you know, obviously I wasn't wearing a Braves jersey.
Yeah. It's not everybody. I think it's the bad apples in every crowd. Right. And once one person starts doing it, taking it a little far, everyone feels like it's appropriate. And then it just turns into this mob mentality. But I agree. I've always wanted to go up there. Now I just want to go up there to see if I survive, because I can be boisterous myself. I got no problem voicing my opinions, especially if my team is winning. Now, the way the last two series have gone, I might've been pretty quiet, but hopefully this year is different. Now, Ronald Acuña just wrote something for the Players Tribune, kind of giving him an insight to like his backstory, his life growing up in Venezuela, how he got into baseball, and what he wants so much for the Braves, and talking about winning a World Series. And I think I want to ask what stood out the most to you, but the thing that stood out the most to me as a Braves fan was the fact that he wants to win a World Series, catch the final out, and he wants the fans to rush the field. Like, it is, because they do that in Venezuela. Like, I know we've seen highlights where like he wins the home run derby and all the fans just rush the field. I mean, it doesn't sound like that could possibly happen in a pro sporting event. But if Ronald Acuña, the face of MLB, says, hey, get on the field, who's to tell them, no, I'm getting on the field.
Yeah, and I mean, last year, that guy that ran on the field and like took a selfie with him, he was all, Ronnie was all about it. He's like, hey, man, yeah, come over here. But yeah, that was cool, that line about him kind of visualizing that. That was really cool. But also everything leading up to that point of the Players Tribune article was why he feels that way. Right, like going back to his ACL tear and his rehab, and he really opened up about his kind of battle with depression during that time, how hard that was on him. He actually went to therapy and he talked about that, which was something I actually did not know about. But it's good to see that out in the open, right? And not even that, but even further back, going even further back in his story, he talked about growing up in Venezuela in his small town, that, you know, he was like, I would have rather never been born anywhere else. I absolutely loved my childhood and my upbringing, and stories about his mom selling lotto tickets and him making baseballs out of tape and newspapers, because that's all they had to make baseballs out of. All that stuff was stuff that we don't always get to hear from Ronnie, because he doesn't feel super confident in his speaking English. And he even talked about that in the article as well, which I've experienced firsthand with him. He is much shyer than you think, which is funny because he's such a big personality on the field. He seems like he's this big, confident, loud guy all the time with a huge personality. He's actually quite shy, especially when it comes to speaking English. Even though he's actually very good at it, I think he just doesn't have the confidence to do it public facing that much, at least in my experience with him. And it was cool to see more of his story through his own words in this Players Tribune article. I think all Braves fans really need to check it out. And just baseball fans, sports fans. It's just a great story.
Yeah, it goes without saying. If you haven't read it, it's long, but it's very worth it. Had me tearing up at 6:30 in the morning this morning. I mean, it's absolutely, like you said, it had a little bit of touching, a little bit of funny, a little bit of magic. Gives you goosebumps, gives you tears. That's the entire, you know, that's what's a great story. It gives you that full range of emotions. And it is his first big, long written word has encapsulated all of it. I think what stuck out to me the most, other than the things you guys said, you guys stole the best ones, was I think the World Series run. I think, you know, you touched on it a little bit. He battled depression because of the knee injury. It was probably the first time in his life he hasn't been able to do everything. He's a superhuman athlete. And for the first time in his life, he really wasn't able to do everything that he wanted to do. And I think, you know, what he said is he stopped watching baseball, particularly he stopped watching the Braves, picked it back up during the postseason run. And I think, you know, I've touched on it a lot this offseason, that this team is very hungry, not only because of the expectations, but a lot of that team from 21 is no longer here. You know, you've got Matt Olson replaced Freddie Freeman, Mike Harris, Spencer Strider. Now you got Chris Sale in the mix. A lot of the bullpen is new. But Ronald Acuña Jr. was not a part of that team. Obviously, he kept the team afloat. For the first half of the season, he's about the only reason that team flirted with a 500 record. I mean, he really was carrying that baseball team. But in his eyes, he didn't contribute to that World Series run. And it just goes to show how important this game is to him and how hungry he truly still is. I thought that was such a special part of that entire piece where he's just saying, guys, I want a World Series. I want to feel like I earned a World Series win. And it just goes to show the best player on the best team is as hungry as ever.
You love to see it, right? As a Braves fan.
The whole thing was special. But like we said, go check it out on the Players Tribune. It kind of gives you jock vibes. Remember when he was on the Players Tribune? Obviously, that was before the playoff run. But maybe we can repeat the success following what happened with Jock Peterson in 2021. Switching gears here. Kelly, I saw a mock draft, and we kind of talked about this last time you were on, but we talked about Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze being the receiver that's on. Now, this mock draft was from ESPN, Michael Tannenbaum, a former NFL GM. He had four quarterbacks going in the top four. He had Marvin Harrison falling right in the Falcons' lap with the eighth overall pick, and we still pass over him in favor of Dallas Turner. Now, I don't know. I don't know about that one. I know the receiver position is not that big, but Marvin Harrison, who a lot of people think is the best player in the entire draft, falling to you right at eight and you pass over him in front of Dallas Turner, that seems hard to imagine.
It's hard for me to imagine because of the factors you just said, but also because what Terry Fontenot has shown us is his philosophy the whole time he's been here. He's always taken the best player available in their minds at whatever spot they were picking at. Look back to Bijan Robinson last year, obviously, and we talked about this last week as well. That was not a need for them, but they thought he was the best guy available at that slot, and that's why they made it happen. That, for me, is the more unbelievable part because we just haven't seen Terry Fontenot reach for positions of need like edge rusher or whatever else throughout the last couple of years. So that's, to me, is the part that doesn't connect. But that guy's paid a lot more money than me to mock draft.
That doesn't mean he knows more than you, Kelly. That does not mean he knows more than you.
Hey, you said it. You said it.
No, I'll go to bat for you. I do not think all these guys, though, Mel Kiper, Matt Miller, all the guys at the big networks. And listen, Dallas Turner may be, you know, the top player rated when the Falcons are on the clock. I'm not debating that. But let's just have a different conversation that he isn't. He's not going to be the pick. Like, I don't know what Terry Fontenot has to do. Make Kyle Pitts the highest drafted tight end in league history. Draft Bijan Robinson after Tyler Algier just broke the franchise record and pass on Jalen Carter, a interior defender who would have filled the need. I don't know what more he has to do to show these, you know, mock drafters that he is going to take the best player available. And if we're talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. falling to the Falcons, it is going to be, there will be no ifs, ands, or buts. Marvin Harrison will be in Atlanta. And it's also not like if we're making this argument about, you know, premium positions. I mean, running back isn't a premium position. Wide receiver is a premium position in today's NFL. When you get a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr., who everybody thinks is a generational prospect, and you pass over him, and, you know, in terms of, you know, you could make the argument Jalen Carter had the red flags off the field, not to get too much into that. You could make that argument, and that's why Bijan Robinson, who's just this sterling resume, great guy. Marvin Harrison is, you know, has shipped in a clean bill of health in terms of off the field. So the Tannenbaum thing is, you know, put Kelly Price on the TV instead of Tannenbaum because I can't stand that.
You know, you make a great point, too, about the character side of things, and I won't, like, go into the Jalen Carter stuff, but we hear Terry Fontenot talk so much about this buzzword he always uses, ethos, and it's something that he really wants to make sure that the guys in this locker room fit, they're good fits with each other, you know, the whole thing that they're trying to do with the culture here, and I know Arthur Smith isn't here anymore, he's a part of building a lot of that, but that's still Terry Fontenot's MO. He's not going to bring in a guy that he knows is going to be disruptive in that way. And I think you make a great point about that because you've seen the guys that they have brought in are guys that are great character fits and just are great, like, locker room guys. So I think that's another part of the equation that a lot of people don't always take into account.
Yeah. All right, Kelly, thank you so much for joining us again. As always, you are fantastic.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Have fun.
The Atlanta Falcons have their quarterback in Kirk Cousins, but as we've talked about, that doesn't necessarily count them out of taking a quarterback, and Raheem Morris even said it yesterday at the owners' meetings that the Falcons will evaluate the quarterback position. It's not guaranteed to go to Taylor Heinicke, which kind of hints that they're going to either bring someone in, maybe it's a Logan Woodside type, Maybe they draft somebody, and one of the most intriguing names to look out for, I know to Falcons fans, is Michael Penix. Now, we're not as high on Michael Penix, but that's not what this is about because we don't know anything. We are not quarterback gurus. These are just our opinions. And to be honest, I don't think a lot of people know anything about quarterbacks. It's kind of like whatever situation they land in because, you know, people have guys going number two overall that bust out in 3 years, and that's NFL GM. So it's very hard to predict. But Jordan Schultz says that the Falcons are a team to keep an eye on. For Michael Penix, Jordan Schultz, very plugged in guy when it comes to the NFL. What do you think about that?
I think that it all depends on the placement in the draft. Anything on day two, I wouldn't be too fond about. That's the second and third rounds. If you're unfamiliar, day three is everything else. A day three pick on that, I'm perfectly fine with it. Like the kid can spin it. The kid's got a rocket. I mean, you make no ifs, ands, or buts. The guy can absolutely sling it. We saw it against Texas. That's where I think a lot of Falcons fans saw him. Maybe, majority of Falcons fans saw him for the first time, and they were like, who is this guy? This guy's absolutely a superstar. He should have won the Heisman over Jane Daniels. No, he shouldn't, because you saw what was the entire body of work the following game against Michigan. He dealt with some inconsistencies in a conference that doesn't necessarily have the best defenses. That Michigan defense was the best defense he faced, and it's, you know, probably the closest to an NFL caliber defense that he's faced, and he struggled. The arm talent is there. There are some injury concerns, a couple knees, a shoulder, throwing shoulder. That's not pretty. And he is older, though the age thing doesn't really – I don't really care about the age thing all that much. I think, you know, from the games I've watched, the inconsistencies are just too great to overcome, particularly over the middle of the field. But I think that whoever they select is coming to a great situation, sitting behind Kirk Cousins with this quarterback-centric coaching staff that Raheem Morris has put together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get into what I do not like and what I do like about Michael Penix, because I've already said this a million times that I'm not the biggest fan of his. But as I said, my opinion does not matter. The biggest reason that I would not want to go on a day two pick on any quarterback, unless you absolutely love him and think for sure in 3 years he's going to be a franchise quarterback, is because you did signal that you're going to go all in this year with Kirk Cousins. And I think you owe it to yourself, to the Falcons fans, and to Kirk Cousins especially, to go out there and fill out the big roster. You can easily find starting players in the second and third round. There's no reason to waste it on a quarterback that at the earliest is going to be playing in 3 years, unless you just fall in love with them. Now, maybe Michael Penix is a guy they fall in love with. They think he's got the intangibles. They think he's got the arm strength. They think working with Zach Robinson over a couple years and Kirk Cousins could mean the world to him.
Yep.
Listen, I'm not going to doubt it one bit until I see it happen 3 years down the road. But I think you do owe it to the fans, the Falcons, the team, the players, to go for it, because you're in a situation where you can go for it, and that would not be taking a quarterback.
Well, these day three picks aren't useless. Like, I don't want to seem like I – because, listen, Tyler Algier, Drew Dahlman, Clark Phillips, DeMarco Helms, Nate Landman, all starters, all on day three or later. Landman wasn't even drafted. So – every single pick is valuable, especially for a Falcons team. The window to compete is right now. They're all valuable.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I know Falcons fans very much would love to see Michael Penix. Hey, and it would be good for the brand. I would be excited about it if it were to happen. One of the premier pass rushers on the entire market, and basically the only one left, unless something else comes to light before the start of the season, is Hassan Reddick. We've talked about him many times on this show, and there's been some new news about what the asking price is for the premier passer from the Eagles.
Yeah, Jake Rabidy of Liberty Line, Philadelphia, and we also believe Adam Schefter said it, but not sure on that, but Jake Rabidy definitely said it. The Eagles are looking for a second round pick, and they aren't going to come off of that. And it's something that I've talked about when we talked about Hassan Reddick in the past, that the Eagles aren't in a position where they have to give Hassan Reddick away for something less. They'll just let him walk and collect their compensatory pick next offseason. So this is a position where if their price is not met, it feels like they're perfectly fine just letting Hassan Reddick kind of play out his deal. And if you're the Falcons or any team trading for Hassan Reddick, it's not only that second round pick, because you are trading for him to extend him. He's in the last year of his deal. He also reveals in that piece as well that and you could go check it out on the site sportstalkatl.com, where I kind of give my quote or my thoughts in a more long form. That he's looking for a contract, $25 million per year. So not only are you giving the second round pick, you're also paying him $25 million per year for a guy who has not had less than double digit sacks since 2019, including like 27 or 28 in the past 2 years, all pro, Pro Bowl times two. I mean, I don't know what the holdup is because, you know, if you look at Montez Sweat, who the Falcons were in on, they were beat out by the Bears, who had a higher second round pick, a more valuable second round pick, and they handed him about a $25 million deal. So I don't know. Listen, Montez Sweat is younger, but he just had his first season where he eclipsed double-digit sacks. He's a little bit younger, but I mean, it's not like Hassan Reddick is just absolutely falling off a cliff production-wise.
No, I mean, and listen, I mean, look around the league at older pass rushers. Like, there's a
Von Miller's like 40.
It's not like cornerback where you're like 31 years old and it's over. Like, Stephon Gilmore is never going to get a massive massive deal anymore. Xavien Howard, all these guys, because they're older and like you lose a step as you and you need those steps when you're a cornerback. Yep. If you're a veteran pass rusher, what you lack. And, you know, maybe explosiveness as you get older, you benefit from experience and being a veteran and learning new moves and stuff like that. I think the only thing you could say negatively about Hassan Reddick potentially and giving up that much for him is because he was playing on such a dominant defensive line over the last two seasons with all those playmakers. You kind of wonder, you're going to be out on an island in Atlanta.
Listen, I'm not going to say anything bad about Philly's defensive line, but Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata, I looked at it. Them combined, Grady Jarrett obviously only played half the season. Them combined were upwards of like close to 10 sacks, 20 plus quarterback hits, 15 to 16 tackles for a loss. Like, this is one of the best interior duos in the NFL. You add one dominant edge rusher and everybody is going to look so much better. I don't know what the holdup is.
No, I agree. Cause I mean, there's no doubt David Onyemata and
was a force.
It's up there with the best defensive tackle duos.
Yeah.
I know Raheem Morris mentioned them in the same light as Aaron Donald. Yes. Maybe two of them combined for one Aaron Donald, which is fair.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald's the best defensive tackle we've ever seen in our lifetime. But yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, if this is something that the Falcons are going to do, if they're going to spend big money on a pass rusher and they're going for it right now, you got to think that Hassan Reddick, and that's something that they're going to do because they've been on them before and it just hasn't come to fruition. Hopefully it does this time. Bleacher Report, Tim Kelly of Bleacher Report recently did an article on the biggest misses for the contending teams in free agency. And listen, he had to come up one for the Braves. Like, there wasn't really anything he could say. So he chose the Braves not signing Aaron Nola, which is probably the biggest miss. I mean, they took a big swing and it was a big miss. They tried to pry away one of the best players on a division rival. Don't blame it all for doing it. It didn't work out. But at the end of the day, I don't know if you can talk about that and regret. I mean, this was the first time Alex Anthopoulos has went out there, put his foot down, put his foot on the pedal and say, hey, we're going to give you a six-year, $160 million deal. Forced the Phillies to up their offer to a seventh year, and that got the deal done. And really, you know, what were the Braves going to do? Go up to 8 years? The Phillies probably would have matched that too. At the end of the day, Aaron Nola wanted to be in Philadelphia. He talked about it with Gabe Burns from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He thought it would be weird to leave.
Yeah.
His heart was in Philadelphia. It takes two to tango. And that's just like you can't really regret something that was never really your decision. They made a strong offer. They went after their guy. Didn't work out.
Well,
I don't know if you can say you can regret that.
Well, it's also like the Phillies kept the status quo. It wasn't like Aaron Nola was an outside free agent and he was in between the Braves and Phillies and then the Braves lost out. Like, the Braves were already behind the eight ball when the offseason began because, like you said, it was later revealed that Aaron Nola preferred the Phillies. He's been there the whole time. It's a great organization for those fans, those players. He's been there his whole career. It would be wild to make that kind of transition, and he's still got some tread left on the tire. So it's not like he's got 2 years left. So I agree. It's a weird – he had to do something for the Braves, and obviously nothing leaks out of Alex Anthopoulos' side of things, so we don't really know what they went for. All this stuff we know seems to be from the Phillies and Aaron Nola's side of things. But I think it's it's just impossible to say the Braves missed on this because the Phillies had him in the bag to begin with. If anything, the Braves were just leverage in negotiations.
Yeah, I mean, if I were going to say anything, and listen, I have nothing against Jared Kelenic. I've been on this show saying he's going to be the biggest surprise of the Braves in 2024. But I think, you know, if you're going to go after regrets, that could be the biggest one, because you actually signed a guy and there's a potential for him to bust, and you spent $25 million on him, even though he'll be cheap the rest remainder of his contract if the Braves keep him around. But that's the only thing I think the Braves could potentially regret. Maybe Chris Sale. But I mean, you know how I feel about Chris Sale. That guy's going to be an absolute superstar. I mean, you've seen it in spring training. The guy's stuff is as good as any pitcher in baseball.
It's just impossible to say regrets because we don't know anything they did or didn't do.
Yeah, well, it's a hard article to do.
Yeah.
It's a hard article to do. And you know what? I give you credit for trying because I wouldn't really know what to say either. That wraps up our show for this evening. Go Braves. Happy opening day weekend. We'll be back with you tomorrow.